There's always the constraint here of time, but let me begin. Now, if you recall, last week, or last time we met, it's been Nathan, please sit closer. Barry, hi. It's been a long time since we met in this class due to the interruptions of Yom Kippur and Sukkot, and it worked out. If I'm not mistaken, we've had 3 shurim in response literature, but we've had 6 shurim on the rough. So it's just the fluke of the calendar so far, but in the course of the year, it should more or less balance out. Now, we got involved what one has to know in order to be a posek, and as I said through the introductory shiur, I get credit to Rav Zevin. I put a certain organization in your mind. What is there in all the literature of Torah Shabbat Peir and all the learning? We spoke about Mefarshim, we spoke about Sifrei Psak, we spoke about the Tshuvot, and we spoke about in our generation the compendiums, the encyclopedia, the Otzrat, call it what you wish, which, again, I made the Rakefet prediction, and I'm smart enough and humble enough to know that I don't know whether I'm right or wrong, but I do have the feeling that following the Holocaust, we're ultimately in a new period. The period of the Achronim has ended, and now we're in a period of the Me'asvim, or the Otzrat, whatever it will be called, or the Asufat, the Balei Asufat. Somehow, in a few hundred years, they'll give it a name. And there's no question that when you look at Torah scholarship since the Holocaust, it is overwhelming what has been accomplished, particularly in the State of Israel. And you have to remember that it's few and far between in war and poverty. And with all the difficulty, it's overwhelming to think of the Encyclopedia Talmudicum, the Yotzer Poskim, and the Shelaton Shuvit on the computer, and all that has been done in the State of Israel, the edited Rishonim. And as I said to the girls from Midrashit Mori, in a totally different context, I was dealing with the concept of Wissenschaft des Judentum in Jewish history today, but I said to the girls, imagine 200 years from now, every Rishon will be edited. You'll pick up a Rashba, you'll pick up a Ritba, you'll pick up a Shita Mekubetzet, which no one has tackled yet, and you're a Ramban, and a Rimigash, and every Rishon will be edited. It'll be a Machaya. And I still studied when there were no editing, and we struggled through texts and footnotes and sources, but that's the advantage of being born later. Without going into the Musar I gave last Tuesday, there is a reason why we're born at the time we're born, those of you that recall the Rav's Chidush of last Tuesday, in the name of Rav Kook. Now, then we shifted gears, we moved into a second lecture, which we're coming into the heart of today. And in this lecture, I told you I would zero in, and I'm not going to finish it today, I'm going to zero in a lot more on the question of the psak vis-a-vis the tshuva. Now, I don't know why, but what I'm getting involved with today, it's a 10-year cycle. For some reason, people that heard this lecture 10 years ago, would you believe it that 2 weeks ago, a Talmud who's in his mid-30s today, married with a flock of children, called me to add something to the lecture, that he came across something, this lecture still rang in his head. Now, I don't know, maybe some of you will hear it and you'll be caught up in it, maybe some of you will just hear it and listen to it theoretically. But let's get in. What is the difference between the psak and the tshuva? And of course, the first difference is that the psak, you're writing in theory, it's theoretical. If I can make an analogy, by the way, is there anyone here who's studying medicine? I'm looking for a medical doctor today to give him a gift. Nobody? Okay. If I can make an analogy, when you study medicine, you study textbooks and you're learning about, I have a brother who went to medical school and I know a little bit about medical school. Many of the fellows of my classmates went to medical school. And, you know, you study textbooks, you learn about this disease and that disease. But imagine the difference when you have to diagnose and treat a person who's sitting before you in your office. Now, mashallah mahadavid omer, you can write all the psakim in the world. Imagine the difference when it's halacha lemaisa and what you're going to say. A person's life may depend upon it. If you're a doctor, your diagnosis, your treatment can make or break the person. Lo aleinu, you catch the cancer in time, you don't catch it in time. Imagine halacha lemaisa, where what you're going to do the person is going to listen to you. She is a nida. She isn't a nida. He is allowed to do it on Shabbat. He's not allowed to do it on Shabbat. Or the person can marry or can't marry. So that's number one. Now, number two, and this is why I ended off the shiur last week, or last time, I showed you that because the tshuva is halacha lemaisa, it's very fascinating. There's one difference between tshuva and between sifrei psakim. When you read sifrei psakim, and for the sake of argument, let's take something you're familiar with, the kitzur shulchan aruch. All right, I don't know. I know when I was 12 years of age, I knew the Kitzah Shulchan Aruch by heart. Whatever I know in the Kitzah, I know from my childhood. I knew it by heart. No, you go through the whole Kitzah Shulchan Aruch, you go through the whole Chochmat Adam, you go through the Chai Adam. Do they ever say, well, I think the Psak should be this way, but I'm in doubt if two other people will agree with me, this is the way the Psak should be. No, what did you say? Did you ever find it, Jacob, in the Kitzah Shulchan Aruch? I never found it. Lehefech. One of my big critiques of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch is that it comes across that the halacha is monolithic and so straight and so clear. And I've often said that even in teaching children, you may have to use the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, but already at the age of 5, a kid is old enough to understand there are differences, there's machloket and psak, no one has a monopoly, it doesn't mean there's one right way. Very important. In my opinion, from where I'm coming from, and from where I was raised, and from the way I'm trying to be machaneich, very important already at the age of 5, tell a kid that the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch sounds like he's the Posek Achron, but he wrote a wonderful sefer. On the other hand, we have to know sometimes the psak is different, or you can find the machleket hapaiskum. Now, when you're writing a tshuva, you're frightened stiff. Because when you're writing a sefer psak, it's all theoretical and you can afford to be machmir and in doubt be machmir as the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch inevitably is. When you're writing halacha lemaisa, a person is standing in front of you, a human being, it's a kohen that wants to marry a grusha and he wants to face the first wedding, maybe she wasn't married properly. It was just a case like this, an American case like this in Jerusalem just last week, and the whole community is talking about it. I got calls last night. I'm not going to comment on it now because I don't know all the details. I only know the broad, the barest outline. But you're dealing with human life. You're dealing with happiness, with literally to marry, yes, not to marry can be a tragedy. You have to give an answer. You're dealing with problems of Shemitah, with problems of Shabbat, halacha lemaisa, where do you eat, what do you buy, what do you do with the food this year? You have to give guidance. And the person is standing in front of you. And here already, you can't be machmir, you have to answer, you're overwhelmed, there are many factors involved. And this is why in the tshuva literature, time and again you will find that the Gedoli Yisrael said, look, I can think I can be mater, I think la halacha, but I'm not brave enough to take it all on my own back. And what I'm saying will only be lemaisa if two other Gedolim agree with me, or if one other Gadol agrees with me. And I told you this is based upon the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Dapsayin Amid Bet, Ki Chechi L'Demate Shibim Mikshura, each one to carry a chip from the beam. It's a rabbinic aphorism. And of course, what the rabbis are saying, Zev, that each one, worry, has to walk away with the chip from the beam. Each one has to carry a little bit. Each one has to share the responsibility. And the Rav, those of you who remember my shiurim last year, and the Rav, didn't the Rav say when he was addressing the YU rabbinic alumni in 1956, and he was giving them the devil for the fact that they don't recognize how many difficult questions there are, and he said, you know, you guys aren't on a level to decide this. And he was talking about in Europe that they used to bring the shilis before Reb Yitzchok Chanan Spector, before the greatest poskim, the Mabushe Yomtev, Reb Yitzchok Chanan Spector. And even they, when they reached the conclusion, would say, but it's only halacha lemaisa if two other gedolim will agree with me. And I showed you that Reb Moshe Feinstein a number of times makes his psak dependent upon the Haskama of Reb Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. And I showed you that Reb Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog made his psak dependent upon the Haskama of Reb Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. And vice versa, Rabbi Yehiel Yaakov Weinberg made his psak dependent upon the haskama of Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog. And this is something you will find in Shivat. You will not find it in psak literature. Psak literature, you say what you want, it's theoretical, no one is standing in front of you. When someone is standing in front of you, and what you say is going to be halacha l'maisa 1 minute later, you have a responsibility. Now, again, I don't want to be facetious, but if it's a Shailan Yantav Sheni, as I've told you many times, when it comes to a Shailan Yantav Sheni Shlomo, I'm not shaking, I'm not overwhelmed. But you're dealing here with Mamzeret, you're dealing here with Aguna, you're dealing here with Chilul Shabbos, you're dealing here with Dinei Nida, you have so many Sheilot that come your way, and boy, you are frightened. These are difficult Sheilot. You're dealing here with the Hechsh of a Mikveh. You know, in Far Rockaway, we went on over that Mikveh, they were makshirit with ice, and every big rabbi in America had to deal with the issue of being makshir the Mikveh in Far Rockaway in the 1950s, when Jews moved to Far Rockaway. It was a beautiful area. It was the heart of modern Orthodoxy, and they dedicated a Mikveh, and for whatever the reasons were, they couldn't get rainwater. The truth, classic way of getting the bar, and they use dry ice. I don't remember all the details, but I remember every rub was afraid to give a psak. And all they did was write pilpul and more pilpul, and I'll say this, but two others have to agree, and went back and forth, and ultimately Rav Moshe's psak was followed, and that came to be the psak that dominated the day. But that's what you find in response literature. You're not going to find it in psak literature. Okay. Then there's a third development, and this development too is something that we referred to in our introductory lecture, but now for the sake of completeness, I want to stress it again. What's fascinating about psak literature, what's fascinating about responsive literature vis-a-vis psak literature, is that in response literature, you come into the laboratory. You actually see the way the mind of the posek works. When you look at some of the classic psak literature, for instance, the Rambam or the Shulchan Aruch to a lesser degree, you absolutely have no idea the way their minds work. And all of you know, I don't have to go into great detail, how much ink has been spilled on the Rambam, because we don't know the way his mind worked. And all of you are aware of the fact that Reb Chaim was asked, it's the famous anecdote that the Rav told so many times, Reb Chaim was asked, Rebbe, why do you devote all your attention to the Rambam? The Rif is a Rishon, the Rush is a Rishon. So Reb Chaim answered, yeah, true, they're all Rishonim, but they all gave reasons for what they think. The Rambam never gave any reasons, and I can say what I want, and no one can contradict me. And that's what Reb Chaim said. Whether we have to take it at face value, I don't know, but there's no question in my mind that what Reb Chaim was saying was that it's tantalizing to deal with the Rambam. The same with the Shulchan Aruch. As much as the Beit Yosef may explain his mind, but sometimes there's so much missing between the Beit Yosef to the psak in the Shulchan Aruch. Now that you can have in a sefer psak, you can have a kitzur psak, you can have the kitzurim we referred to, the chayei adam, the chachmat adam, the kitzur Shulchan Aruch, the keset sofa. There's so many sefrei psak that tell you what to do, A, B, C, D, how to be a good Jew. There is no deep explanation of way the mind of the posek worked. When it comes, and by the way, even where he tells you how his mind works, for instance, let's take in modern times what I consider the finest sefer written of psak in modern times that also had great impact on subsequent literature is, of course, no, you tell me, Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchata, right or wrong. And even there, wherever Rabbi Yoshua Neuwirth tries to tell you how his mind works, it's in the footnotes. It's not an integral part of the sefer. You understand what I'm saying? And it's not spelled out. Many times in the footnotes, see this, see that, it's not spelled out. And students studying the Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchata, 90% of the people studying it, it's used in a textbook, Baruch Hashem, it's available in an English translation, and people are hurrying over the English, which say that they don't know what, they're taking the halacha l'maisa. In a tshuva, there you see the development. It's the laboratory. It's the difference between reading a textbook on how to make ether and going into the laboratory and making it yourself. Holding the test tubes, playing with the ingredients, measuring, doing, experimenting, failure. It's like what's going on with this one damn missile that the Israeli aircraft industry or armament industry has to develop. What's it, the Hawk? Am I right? What's it called? The Hawk? What's it called? The Arrow? Ribbono shel Olam, we're all losing sleep. It does work. It doesn't work. It hit the target. It didn't hit the target. Now they say it didn't hit the target. They know why it didn't hit the target. 20 years from now, Michael Olshin's going to be a colonel in the Israeli army with 100 arrows under his command. He's not going to know all the development and all the shackler and tire and the thinking and the analysis and the sugure and the development. He is going to have the final product. But when you see a tshuva, you see the way the posek's mind works. He has to develop it. He has to elaborate. He has to prove his point. He has to be ready for criticism. No one can be a posek. Remember, Uri, by the way, you'll tell me after class if I owe you money, how you handle that, so I'll set my account with you. No one in the world can be a closet posek. You understand? The worst thing in the world, and this sometimes happens, Jack Levinstein asks a shaila, so the Rebbe tells him, what I'm telling you, Jack, is only for you. You're not to tell anybody else. Yeah, that's not a posek. That's a fraidy cat. You understand? That's a fraidy cat. A posek, when you ask Rav Moshe Rishayla, he writes out a long tshuva. I told you I was a kid. You ever hear the story of how I come to figure in the first Rav Moshe's first volume of Yoredeya? I was a kid. I'll spend a minute on the story, unless I told it. Did I tell it in the class? But it's interesting the way, the difference between the Rav and Rav Moshe. I had the following shayla. In my parents' house, in where I grew up in America, you lived in a big apartment building, 75 families, one building, the landlord painted every 2 years, like clockwork. So my parents didn't know, and they never took the mezuzah off. So every 2 years, another coat of paint was added on the mezuzah. And then by the time I started to understand, the mezuzah has to be checked, and if you paint over a mezuzah, it's dafka reyata, the chances are you puzzled the mezuzah. So I want to take the mezuzah off. I see that in order to take the mezuzah off, I'll have to make a hole in the wall. There's so much paint on them. So my parents were upset, going to make holes in the wall. So my mind, I was a young kid and I had a good mind. I was learning with the Rav. So I came up with the idea that I should be able to put up a second mezuzah. New? What's wrong with putting up a second mezuzah? Bal Tosef. Ah. But what about if you put it up al tanai? I say as follows. He told him to let it. It's based upon the sugya in Menachot with Tzitzit, and I say that, and I say, if the first mezuzah is kasher, the second mezuzah is a kishut ba'alma. And if the first mezuzah wasn't kasher, then of course the second one is what counts. I make it tanai, I have my problem solved. No, a little kid named Donnie Rothkopf thought up this question. The Rav didn't know how to paskin. He said, I could see it either way. You know, he went back and forth with his lamdas, couldn't reach a conclusion. So he told me, yes, Rav Moshe, let's see what Rav Moshe says. And this is Rav Moshe, wrote me a long answer with a whole analysis of the sugya, and reaches a conclusion. And that takes guts, because I showed that to Rav Soloveitchik. I showed that to my Rebbe, to Rav Moshe's first cousin once removed. The Rav could jump through the ceiling, you understand? When we hear Rav Moshe, we tremble. The Rav hears Rav Moshe. It's his buddy, his friend, his colleague, his relative. Either he agrees or disagrees. I remember when the first big Rav Moshe came out, I went over to the Rav after class. We were good friends already. And I said, Rebbe, what do you think of Rav Moshe's tshuva on this sugya? I think it was on Rav Moshe Rasa's, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was on liquid soap on Shabbos. And the Rav went bananas. The Rav, yeah, Rav Moshe says, the Rav wanted to do like an explosion. You know, was the Rav in his prime then? He was still, hadn't come down yet completely. There was an explosion. I mentioned Rav Moshe to him, but this takes guts. You understand? You have to have guts. You publish, you have to show, and people are going to argue with you. And your interpretation of the Gemara, Rav Moshe deals with Geirah, and there's so many issues you can take where Rav Moshe, for instance, take the whole Shaila of Geirah, which, by the way, is the most difficult Shaila on the American scene. There is no Shaila like the Shaila of Geirat. It's the most difficult Shaila on the American scene. You have so much Geirat with so little Kabbalat mitzvot. So what do you do? And Reb Moshe analyzes the whole Gemara, and what's the source? Show me an open Gemara where you see Gerim being accepted, where there's absolutely no Kabbalat Mitzvah. Show me an open Gemara. You all learned it. Masechet Shabbos, Daf Lamed Aleph, Lamed Amud Bet, Lamed Aleph, the whole sugi with what? The Gerim with Hillel HaZaken. Unbelievable. A Ger comes to Gairani, Almanat, that'll be a Kohen Gadol. I don't believe in Torah Shabbat. If a Ger came to me and spoke to me that way, I'd borrow Shammai's hammer and beat the guy over the head. And Hillel's makabal the guys and makes them into Jews. They become tzaddikim and whatnot. A terrific problem. New Michael, look in and see, Jay, see the way Rav Moshe analyzes that sukkah. You understand what I'm saying? So this is the difference in a psak. It's 1, 2, 3, and do this and do that. And you have the Rambam where he did no more than that. Even the Shulchan Aruch is modeled that way. And even where there are explanations, sometimes the explanations are very brief and you don't really analyze, and you're just like in the Beit Joseph, you add up what the Rush said and what the Riff said and what the Rambam said. You know what I'm saying, right? You add it all up, you're not really analyzing. But in the laboratory, when you're developing the arrow, you gotta analyze the results and the sugyas and bimanat teach and take it apart, and that's exactly what you're doing in a tshuva. So gentlemen, these are the three big differences. The concept of theoretical versus halacha lemaisa, which results in the concept in a tshuva of asking others to join with you, you're frightened stiff to take total responsibility on your shoulders, and in a tshuva, you have to analyze and show the whole development. Okay, now we come to the heart of today's shiur. And I want to throw out an unbelievable question. This is obviously something that you don't think about. But there's an entire literature on this, and it's a very fascinating topic. Tell me, gentlemen, when a tshuva and a psak contradict each other, which is more important? Which do you rely on? There's a psak, and there's a tshuva. And there's a contradiction. What do we rely on? Now, generally speaking, we can find this question in two different categories. Number one, two different machabrim. You have two different machabrim where a tshuva contradicts a psak contradicts a tshuva. Here is a great posek. Wrote a sefer of Tshuvat. Here is a great posek, wrote a sefer of Psakim. And they contradict each other. Who do you follow? The Psak or the Tshuva? We can also find it in a second area, where the same Machaber contradicts himself. He wrote Sifrei Psak, and he wrote Sifrei Tshuvat, and the same Machaber contradicts himself. So we can find it in one of two ways. X versus Y, or X versus X in his own writings. What do you do? Alright. Now let's go to the first area. The truth of the matter is that in the first area, there is almost no literature written whatsoever that a Mechaber that we'll call X writes a Sifrei Psak contradicting a Mechaber we call Y who writes a Tshuva. There's almost no literature whatsoever. Why? And I'll tell you why. Because in order for there to be such a question, it means you don't know what was written first and who was the greater authority. In the course of history, such a question resolves itself. Because we have a klal that we're going to come to later this year. It's a very important klal. It's brought down already. There is so much on this in the Rishonim, and it's so important, Bisman Hazah. Halacha kabatra'i. All of you are aware of it. We always paskin like the later authorities. Can anyone tell me why we paskin like the later authorities? What do you say? Because we take for granted, and I'm saying it on a popular level now, that if someone paskined a certain way in the 20th century, he weighed what was written before him, and we have the klal, Yiftach b'daro, because Shmuel b'daro, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, and we have to follow, Ein l'dayana l'mashenot ro'ot, Hashofet Hashem yiyeh bayamim ha'hein, and we have a klal halacha kabatra'i, which is all I want to say in this topic for today's shiur. The truth of the matter is, I'm not saying the whole story at all, but I am saying enough to tell you why we don't have a massive problem in two different machaberim, because generally speaking, there's a time difference between one machaber to another. Shlomo, give me one more second. Another reason is that in the course of Torah history, in the course of halachic history, one machaber becomes more important than the other one. And even if we're not sure when the tshuva was written, when the psak was written, nevertheless, over 100, 200, 300 years, one machaber becomes more important than the other one. And I'll give you a simple example. Bizman Hazeh, there is no question that a psak of the No Debi Yehuda carries more weight than a psach of the Minchat Oni. They were contemporaries. They were both giants. There's no question that the Chatam Sofer's psach carries more weight than the Minchat Oni. There's no question that No Debi Yehuda carries more weight, perhaps, than the Shilat Yavetz. Somehow, in the course of time, a certain Hiskimu Aleihem Kol Yisrael develops. So that it's very rare that this question should come up with two different machabrim. Shlomo, yes. I answered it? Right. One second, I got a very good question. I just want to repeat the question. I mean, you're way ahead of me. I'm going to come into the Rishonim now, and you're taking me into 1995. But nevertheless, I it's a wonderful question. Shlomo just asked that you come into Rav Shecht and you show him that there's a contradiction between the Aruch HaShulchan and the Mishnah Berurah. How do you paskin? And there you have, of course, two Sifrei Psakim. It's not Shuvat. It's two Sifrei Psakim of two Machabrim who live basically at the same time, and each was a Posek Mufak in the full sense of the word. So I'll tell you. Reb Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, and you can check this out, they reissued Rav Henkin's writings. I don't know if you're aware of it. They're two volumes, Kol Kedvei Reb Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. Reb Yosef Eliyahu Henkin always favored the Aruch HaShulchan over the Mishnah Berurah. He considered the Aruch HaShulchan the greater posek of the two. I will tell you, my inclination is to favor the Aruch HaShulchan. And I don't know if this is Rav Henkin's reason why his grandson writes in his name that he favored the Aruch HaShulchan, but to me there's a very simple reason. If you're familiar with the Aruch HaShulchan, it's practically Shelet and Shuvat, because every issue he develops in great depth, you can see the way he thinks, you can see his mind. He begins with the Mishnah and into the Gemara and into the Rishonim and the various levels and the way you have to operate, and he takes a point of view. And because the analysis in such a way, he appeals to me in a brisker fashion. Whereas the Mishnah Berurah, generally speaking, counts up Achronim. He will be menateich the basic sugya, but then when he gets involved halacha lemaisa, he is counting Achronim, adding up. And all of you understand that someone raised in Brisk, the Aruch HaShulchan, appeals to me infinitely more. And this is the Kabbalah we have in the name of Rav Henkin. Now, what did Rav Tzvi Shechta paskin? Because this is fluid. It's wide open yet. You understand? I don't think we're only living the 50 years, 55 years after the Mishnah Berurah's death. So it's not ancient history. It's fluid. What did Rav Tzvi Shechta, what did Rav Heschel say? Did he quote the Reb Yosef Eliyahunkin? No, but say that, I understand. No, okay, but you're asking me. Of course, you can choose yourself if you follow the Mishnah Berurah. If Michael Oshman tells me he's following the Mishnah Berurah and Jack Mosley is following Derech HaShulchan, Banish Shalom, they both have on Malis Smoch. But you're asking me, who do, in other words, when we say two different Mechabrim, one overtakes the other, I don't know. Time will tell. But all I can say is that Rav Henkin's grandson has written a long article which is republished in the two volumes, I forget in which volume, it's probably in the first volume, but it doesn't matter, where he writes about his grandfather always preferring the Aruch HaShulchan over the Mishnah Berurah. The Rav, I have no tradition, I don't know. Of course, the Aruch HaShulchan was part of the Rav's family, you know, the Aruch HaShulchan was a mechutin with the Netziv, so there is an interrelationship there, but nevertheless, I don't ever recall the Rav discussing it. I have a gut feeling that when push came to shove, the Rav would prefer the Aruch HaShulchan over the Mishnah Berurah, although the Rav walked as an equal among them, and he probably had his own mind and his own concept. But this is a classic example, it's a very good example of two Mechabrim, very similar, but to me the Aruch HaShulchan is more like Shelet and Shuvit. You can see his mind, his entire development, his entire thought. It's a magnificent sefer on Dalet Chelfi Shulchan Aruch, and even Hilchot HaDa Mashichot as well, which has come out in manuscript in modern times. Okay. And that's why Jeff, you read me and you didn't treat me. And why I said Yiftach B'Doro K'Shmuel B'Doro, because you can come along and say, how can you say that you have to listen to Reb Moshe Feinstein? Where does he come to Rebbe Akiva? But no, we have to listen to him, to his mind, to his thinking. Look at the Hakdama of Reb Moshe to the Yigrot Moshe. You'll understand what I'm saying. You're right, but I'm right too. Put me a little deeper. But I don't want to be, you know, get off track. You're absolutely right. But what's the concept? The posek in your dar. You can't turn around. The Rav used to say, you know, we once had a Shaila. The Rav, you know, when all the memoirs come out now of the Rav, and I've now listened to more has paid them, more has paid them. By the way, I have to tell you in parentheses, I'm overwhelmed how all the Talmidei of the Rav gave Hespedim and no one said Divrei Torah. It's an amazing phenomenon that they were afraid to say Divrei Torah. Instead of trying to emulate the Rav, no one said Divrei Torah. It's an amazing phenomenon. I couldn't believe it. They just told Maisalach and say Avad here and Avad there. But the way the Rav taught us the Masbid, the only one that did anything, Nathan, give me a chance, was Rabbi Lamb. But I heard Dava Brunchbegel on the coast and Moshe David Tenla. I couldn't believe everyone is so frightened to say Divrei Torah. We can't equal. Reb Chaim Soloveitchik himself said openly that, and by the way, that's what's wrong with that printout of my talk. All the Divrei Torah I said before that, the hour and 15 minutes of Divrei Torah is not there. All it has is the last 20-25 minutes of the shiur. But okay, it doesn't matter. But what did I want to say about the Rav? What was my takeoff point? Excuse me. Yeah, there has paid them on the Rav and. One second. What was the takeoff point? We were talking about the Aruch HaShulchan and the Mishnah Berurah, and the has paid them on the Rav, and it was something I heard. No, I'll have to listen. I've lost that. I'll have to listen to the tape. Excuse me? Yiftach B'Dor K'Shmuel B'Dor, the Posek Hador. We have to come to the person in our time. We can't go back. Oh, yeah. Oh, so one of the stories. Sorry, I have it. So the Rav, came in from Boston, and a lot of times he would come in on Monday, and he would miss Kriyas HaTorah. So what he would do wasn't any big deal. Right after Shir, he'd ask the boys in the shir, how many of you didn't daven with a minyan today? And even if we didn't have a minyan, all we had to do was go into the Beit Medrash in a minute. There were 30 guys that think they created a Torah. And, you know, and a Maritz might think that Kriyat HaTorah was Monday afternoon. The Rav Shita was, there was a chiyuv. If you didn't hear it in the morning, you could read it all day. So it was a very odd thing. Right after shir, we'd all go into the Beit Medrash with the Rav, and we'd take out the Torah and have Kriyas HaTorah, just Kriyas HaTorah. So one time they found a shayla in the Torah scroll. So the Rav said, all right, we were up to shlishi already. So the Rav said, fine, put it aside, and we'll let a sofa look at it, but take out another one, we'll finish lighting. And the Rav broke into a big smile. He said, one thing I can tell you boys, if this would be my Zayda Reb Chaim or my father Reb Moshe, we would have to start the whole laning over again. But I'm not my Zayda, I'm not my father, I'll be Samech on the Paiskim, and we'll start with Shlishi. So that's exactly the attitude. That Reb Moshe Feinstein, where does he come to Reb Kivega? Where does the Rav come to Reb Chaim? So you're going to tell me we're going to depend upon their thinking, but that's where Halacha Kabatrai, Yiftach B'dor Kishmul B'doro, and if the post-sake living in 1994 weighed all the psukim given before him and all the children, this is what he paskin, we have to bow before him and accept this psak, and this is Halacha Kabatrai. Now, as I said, when it comes to two different machabim, there is practically no literature whatsoever, because in the course of time, the Sheila ameliorated itself for the reasons I just stated. When it comes to one machaber, there's a world of literature. However, before I begin that, as far as I know, there is only one basic reference in the Rishonim to the question of the tshuva versus the psak. One basic reference. Adarabba, keep your eyes open and see whether you can find an earlier, all-encompassing reference to this question than the one I'm going to cite now. And the one I'm going to cite now is from the latter period in the Rishonim in Germany. It's from the Maharil. Rabbeinu Yaakov ben Reb Moshe Halevi Molin. Maharil Morenu Harab Reb Yaakov Halevi. Lived in the 1400s, and it's in the Tshuvat Maharil Siman Ayin Bet. Now, I'll tell you something very fascinating. From the time I originally did this tshuva, all we had was the original edition of the Maharil, the one that was in every rabbinic library. Believe it or not, in the course of time, a brand new edition of the Maharil came out, Machon Yerushalayim, a scholarly edition with footnotes and manuscripts, and what a pleasure to deal with the new edition. Now, the Maharil appears, it is Siman Ayin Bet. Siman Ayin Bet. And it deals with a problem which Baruch Hashem, we no longer have today, but was a tremendous problem among the Rishonim. Lo Aleinu, many times the Gentiles conquered Jewish cities. When they conquered Jewish cities, women, single women, were left under Gentile control. Now, all of you know this is a sugya in Ketuvot, whether they came al mamon or nefashat, you know what I'm talking about? That is a basic difference in why the Gentiles came. Did they come to take away Jewish money, or did they come to kill and plunder? If they only came to rob and steal, the chances are they did not harm the women. But if they came to kill, then of course life is worthless. So if you're already killing, what's wrong with taking advantage of the fact that you have Jewish women at your disposal? Now, halacha lemaisa, what's the problem? Ribbono shel Olam, what's the problem? The problem is the kohen. This is always the problem. A Jewish woman who a Gentile rapes, doesn't, in other words, forcibly rapes her. From that moment on,
the woman has a din of a zona, and she's psula l'kohen. And this is a terrible, terrible halachic problem. In other words, if she would not be married, if she's a single girl, let's say for the sake of argument, it's not so terrible. But nevertheless, she's psula l'kohen. If she's a married woman, so if it's a woman married to a Yisrael or a Levi, and she's raped forcibly by a non-Jew, the husband can take her back. But if she's raped forcibly by Gayasot, as the Gemara calls it, then the husband can't take her back. And this is a terrible tragedy. And I don't have to tell you, Halacha L'maisa, one of the worst tragedies I know of, happened in Williamsburg a number of years ago. The entire New York community was shaking. A Hasidic woman went to mikveh, and when she came out of the mikveh, she was raped by a local inhabitant of the Williamsburg community who wasn't Jewish, to put it mildly. And Nebuch, the poor woman, was Asura Labala, and there was many children involved. It was a terrible, terrible story, a terrible, terrible tragedy. And this is the problem. And time and again, this problem came up among the Rishonim, Jewish women conquered by Gentiles. Do they have a din of zonat? Are they muteret lekohanim? And would they be mutar lebaleihem if they are married to Kohanim? And there's an entire literature on this question. And here he's dealing with the problem, and they're getting involved with the whole question of the woman and her husband, and he says as follows. Uma shekatafte is writing to the person who asked the question. Uma shekatafte she'ein lismocha l'tshuva, the person inquiring said, we have to follow the Sifrei Psak. We shouldn't be samach on the Tshuvat. If Tshuvat are mekilot, we shouldn't be samach on the Tshuvat. This is what the inquirer says. And the great Maril answers him, Adarabba, halacha l'maisa have, v'alfini minaychu tvei medivrei haposkim, Shelo hayu bishat hora'ah, and the Maril says something unbelievable, that adaraba, a tshuva is halacha l'maisa, it's worth infinitely more than something which is only theoretical in a sefer psak. And then he quotes the Gemara in Baba Batra. The Gemara in Baba Batra, daf kuf lamid amid bet, he quotes the Gemara, Tana Rabbanon, Ein lemeiden halacha lo mipi limud velo mipi ma'asa ad sheyomru lo halacha lema'asa. What an unbelievable Gemara. The Gemara says openly that as long as a Rebbe is learning a sugya and involved in Baba Kami, involved in Baba Batra, and you're learning a sugya, you still cannot paskin la halacha. And even if the Rebbe says this is the psak, like a safer psak, this is his conclusion, it still is not worth that much. The minute the Rebbe says halacha l'maisa, this clinches it. That means the great mind that's saying that, Barry, he's putting his mind on the line, his reputation on the line, his yirat shemayim on the line. Evan, this man is saying, halacha l'maisa, you can follow me. And this is the most important concept in the world. And this is a tshuva. And this is what makes a tshuva so important. And the Maril goes on, umishim hachi, gasinim b'talmuda b'kama duchtin, we use the concept, halacha l'maisa. And for instance, he quotes the Gemara in Bracha, daf chav dalet amud aleph. And the Gemara says, Ula Agmarin, Ula Agmarun, halacha l'maisa hu diavid. Why did he do this? He did it halacha l'maisa to show that this is what we should do. And the Maril goes on, V'chein b'Azarua comes in many places in the Azarua. He tells you it's halacha l'maisa, l'hodir she'ein kan safik v'gimgum. You're no longer in doubt, you're no longer apprehensive, you have the guts, the self-confidence. This is what you're to do. V'hatshuvit she'es pasku al ha'maisa, hainu halacha l'maisa. And he says, when a tshuva paskins halacha l'maisa, we can be samach on it 100%, and it's infinitely more important than a sefer psak. So this is an unbelievable Mahariel. And this Mahariel, this Mahariel is stating black and white that whenever you have a question, always follow the tshuva if the tshuva contradicts the Sefer Psak. The tshuva, more important, more definitive, more courage. Entom gimgum. You're not upset. You're not questioning. You're not in doubt. There is nothing that is disturbing you. You realize it's lamaisa. And if a posek says it in a tshuva, accept it even more than a Sefer Psak, which is theoretical. And this is the Mahariel. It's an amazing Mahariel. By the way, Yaakov and Prejah, it doesn't answer the question you asked me yet last year. We'll get to that next week. But it's certainly putting the groundwork down. Now, this is the Mahariel, but as I said, two different Mechabrim. It doesn't happen. Halacha Kavadrai, in the course of time, who knows, Reb Moshe Ragitz with Reb Henkin, for whatever the reasons are, every Beitin in the world has accepted Reb Moshe B'dieved in civil marriage. I don't think there's a Beitin in the world which today is posting like Reb Henkin on a B'dieved level. So somehow, with two different Mechabrim, the problem ameliorates itself, and with all due respect to the wonderful words of the Mahariel, 100 years later, we don't need the Mahariel. We already see who is the greater posek, who is more accepted, and we pass him that way. But where we have one Mechaber who contradicts himself, wow, what a question. What do we do? Now, you know what's interesting? The entire... Me the me hacholchim here. What's today's date? 2017. I have no concept of dates, time. It's the 10th. Zev Itzkowitz, Jay Weitzman is here. Danny Green. This is Sunday. Barry, Tuesday class. Thank you. Thank you. Wow, that's worse than I just don't know the date, Barry, but you're really a Rangitan in land and Kalek Kavod. David Schwartz. Don't see David Schwartz. Evan Bard is here. Michael Ocean is here. Nathan Goldberg is here. Avraham Goldman. I got a Jason Nepel. Mark Fader. Shlomo Holman. Uri Cohn. Yaakov Kermaya. Anyone know who he is? Gad Dishi. Jacob Rosenthal. Avi Schreiber. Don't see him. Every year it's so sad. The animal slaughters the student, not vice versa. Eli Schick. It's a shame because the sheet of Chena, they'll take it, they'll pass it, they'll forget it, they'll never use it. And today's class will come back to them for the next 100 years. Eli Schick. Who is Eli Schick? Jay Pasner is not here either. Is there anyone in this room? 1 second. Where's the girl? Girls from Israel? And he got engaged? What's the girl's name? One at a time. I can't hear so many different names at once. It has to be one girl. Nissenbaum? I'm marking present as a gift. But that's only for today. Anyone else in the room whose name... Okay, everyone. Are you in the class, Avi? Avi, you'll be here? Good. Okay, Avi Baumel. There's a man who's not afraid of your Rodea. Again, is there a doctor in the room? No. Okay. Okay, well, I have to work on names, but I have to work on this. Okay. Gentlemen, God, the greatest amount of literature is on the Rush and Reb Yosef Karo. But we're going to begin elsewhere. We already find in the Rambam where at times there are unbelievable contradictions in the Rambam. And let me give you examples. Look into the Torah, Or HaChaim. Siman Nun Tet. No? Have an interesting problem here. Yotzer Ara. What is the heart of Yotzer Ara? Kedusha. Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. And afterwards we say, Baruch Vot Hashem Mimkomo. Can you say it be Yechidat? Kedushin Shmon Esrei, can you say be Yechidat? Absolutely not. All of you know that if you don't have a minion, you don't have Kedusha, you don't have Kaddish, Davisha Pekedusha. What about the Kedusha of Yotzer Ara? And you should know, there's an absolute contradiction of the Rambam. Look into Perek Hilchat Tfilah, Perek Zion, Halacha Yud Zion, and the Rambam paskins that a Yachid does not say Kedusha. She'ein HaYachid Omer Kedusha. The Torah quotes him openly, Kedusha Shabi Yotzer, Kotav HaRambam Zal, She'ein HaYachid Omer Oto. And if this is the way the Torah paskins, it means that when we daven without a minion, we bind a shalilim. You not only don't say Kedusha of Shmon Esrei, you don't say Kedusha of Yotzrat, it means take another 3 minutes off the davening. You ever see a guy daven without a minion? Clock it. How long it takes someone to daven without a minion in the morning. He does God a whole favor if he says all the Pesukei Dezimra. I've already seen wise guys, Baruch Shama, Ashrei, Yishtabach, and imagine if he doesn't have to say the Yotzrat, all he says is two little brachot, Kriyat Shema, Shmon Esrei, Tachton for a second, Ashrei, Valetzion, he's done. Give him 15 minutes by the clock, he is done. It's the Pesach of the Rambam. Nevertheless, in the Tshuva, the Rambam wrote, Kedusha Shabiyotzer, Yachid Omer Oto. Very interesting. Now, total contradiction. No? What did the Rambam write first? Avraham, I challenge you. Did he write the Tshuva first? Did he write the Mishnah Torah first? There is no way you will know. You know who did us a tremendous favor? The greatest favor in the world, Reb Moshe Feinstein. You know why, Jason? Why do I say Reb Moshe Feinstein did us such a tremendous favor? Because every tshuva in the Reb Moshe is dated. And most tshuva, he tells you who he's writing to, which is very important too. Reb Moshe did us the greatest favor in the world. You can see development. Did you ever deal with Tshuva HaRashba, Avi? I challenge you to tell me you're a Talmud Chacham, the grandson of a big Talmud Chacham. I challenge you to tell me what the Rashba Shita is on Afkar Kedushin. Michael Olshin, one Tshuva contradicts another, and there are no dates. You can stand on your head, there are no dates. You're going to resolve this? Now I'll tell you something else. And it's all brought down, look into the Beit Yosef. The Beit Yosef brings down yet another very fascinating tshuva. Because the Beit Yosef, after all, wants to justify our minhag that we all say, Kedusha b'yechidat. He brings down from the Rambam's only son that we know about, Rab Avraham ben Rambam, who is a great Talmud Chacham as well. Also, Gadi, what else can you tell the class about the Rambam? It's very fascinating. He was a Mekubal. Here the Rambam was the heart of logic and being rational, Zev. Am I right or wrong? And his own son, in addition to being a big Lamdan, was also a Mekubal. It's an amazing thing. Now, that Rambam's son wrote a tshuva. By the way, many of these tshuva only were around in manuscript. In the 1800s already, in France,
Goldberg issued the Birchat Avraham. It's the chibur of the Rambam collected in a semi-scholarly edition. He wrote a chibur where he said, I saw with my own eyes, shebeno shel Rambam heyid al aviv zal, shekatav bektav yado b'tshuva achat, shehayachid yachol lomro, shaf al pi shekadav b'mad esheni yachid yachol lomro, achakach hazabo v'tafas shitat harash. It's an amazing thing that there's testimony from Rav Avraham ben Rambam that the tshuva was written afterwards. And that he saw in his father's own handwriting that his father changed his mind, and his father Mark said, what I wrote in the Mishnah Torah is not what I consider today halacha lemaisa. I consider the Rush right. And this is where the Beit Yosef says, halacha lemaisa, we're samach on the son, we're samach on the Tshuvat HaRambam, and the Tshuvat HaRambam knocks out the psak in the Mishnah Torah. Okay? This is one example. The Rambam, and by the way, here he contradicts himself on a very important topic. That's halakha l'maisa, day in and day out. Now, I'll show you another contradiction that those of you who have studied Mishnah Berurah have come across. Mishnah Berurah quotes it. It's nothing that is so esoteric. Look into Hilchat Tzitzit, Perek Yud Aleph, Sif Katan Aleph in the Mishnah Berurah. And look in to the Rambam, Mishnah Torah, Hilchat Tzitzit, Perek Bet, Halacha Zion. No? What happens? You're walking along the street and you find Tzitzit on the street. Can you pick up those tzitzit and use them? Walking along the street. The Rambam paskins in the Mishnah Torah? Absolutely not. Some may have made the tzitzit. Shelo l'shem tzitzit. Kid was playing around, fooling around. People were fooling around. People were involved in therapy. Put the strings together, Avraham. You follow me? Halacha l'maisa, the Rambam paskins God, you are not allowed to use such tzitzit. And in a tshuva, the Mishnah Berurah brings down, that in the Kesef Mishnah brings down a tshuva to Rambam, chazabo achakach, that the Rambam changed his mind. And now you have a tremendous machloket looking to the Mishnah Berurah. How do we paskin? Do we paskin like the Rambam in the tshuva, or do we paskin like the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah? And halacha l'maisa, it can be a big mafkamina. You're walking along Israel, the streets of Israel, and you find the chutim that look to you like chutei tzitzit. Can you make tzitzit with it? Can't you? Was it made l'shma? Wasn't it made l'shma? Machleket ha-poiskim, machleket ha-rambam. He contradicts himself. The tshuva contradicts the Mishnah Torah. Okay? Now, I don't know. My gut reaction is, b'zman hazeh, I would paskin if you found something that looks like chutei tzitzit, you could probably use it. Because nowadays, people don't get involved in making kafal abba, kafal shmona. I don't know. But it's machleket ha-poiskim. There it is in the Mishnah Berurah. Yes, Avraham. Yeah, of course it would depend where it was found, how it was found. But there's no question, if you find tzitzit on Rehov Mei Sharim, there's no doubt that it's some guy who just bought it a few minutes ago and dropped it on the floor. A sucker like me, you understand? I keep extra tzitzit around in my house. It's so abakanfiyot, are so cheap in Israel. But I always spend the time making tzitzit. My grandchildren should see that people still know how to make tzitzit. It's just important to teach the next generation how to make tzitzit. You know, we forgot how to shech, we forgot how to kasha, we forgot treifet, we forgot everything. We don't do it anymore. I told you what Rabban Soloveitchik told me. He gave me the devil in Midrashit Moriah. We should be teaching Hilchot Treifet, not in the Kolel. He says, the Kolel, forget about Hilchot Shechita, forget about Hilchot Treifet. That's for rabbis. They're going to slaughterhouses. How many of you are going to be in a slaughterhouse? I had one student. All the years I've taught in the YU Kolel, I have one student who became a shochet halacha lemaisa, Abby Kilman, worked for Hendada, and he took nose, treifus, and everything. But he worked in the slaughterhouse, not in the Wayukola. But the women, he says, teach them treifus. Teach them Yoredeya. Teach them treifus. So you're right. It depends. Hilchat it sits it. I keep strands around, chutim around in my house. Whenever it sits goes, I call over a grandson. I have to find the time, and I make it, and I help when he watches me, and I say that they should see. You have to know how to make sits. It's no big deal. Gentlemen, I will now give you a special gift. If you have a soul that loves Torah, what the issue I'm about to raise now will haunt you the rest of your life. It has haunted me for on to 30, 40 years. I have yet to find a solution. Okay? I don't know of any other Rambam that has tantalized so many Talmidei Chachamim and we don't have a solution. And boy, now we're not talking about tzitzit, and now we're not talking about anything esoteric. We're talking about getting married, Avi, which, as you know, is an important step that many of you have done, I hope, for happiness and for a lifetime of companionship. Avi, how did you marry your wife? What did you do in the wilds of Toronto? Which, by the way, is probably the firmest city in the Western world, percentage-wise. I believe I'm correct when I say that. The highest, although they told me Montreal may have an even higher percentage of Shomer Shabbat, which is an amazing thing. Nuami, how did you marry your wife? Go ahead. You gave her a ring. You're Talmid Chachamim. You're not dummies. You're not stupid enough to think. I've had people who think you marry. You know, the ignorance of people. Sometimes a woman said to me the other day, "How can you eat during Shemitah? You're not allowed to eat. The land has the life value. You can't eat." I said, "What do you think? You're supposed to starve? It may be a mitzvah. The achla perhaps will be a mitzvah to you. You have to know how to eat, pay rich meat, and how to keep the kedusha. That's a different story." The ignorance. I once had a person swear that you marry a woman three ways. You have to do it three different ways together. Shtar, kesef, bia. The kesef is the ring, the shtar is the ktuva, the bia is the yichud. I looked at the person, "You're out of your mind," I said. The ktuva has as much to do with a shtar as a Chinaman on the moon. You understand? The shtar kedushin is like a shtar get. It has to be written like a get. A ktuva is a bill of sale. It's a warranty. When you buy an Amcor refrigerator, you get a warranty for 1 year. You buy a Mitsubishi, you get 3 years. That if the carver, you buy a TV screen, you get a 5-year warranty on the tube. So Avi Bamel, the dummy, gave this girl a lifetime warranty even after he's dead. The guy signs a ktuvah that read, "Glima the Al Ktifai, the Chayai, you but the Chayai, the shirt off your back, you're going to give her whether you're alive or dead. You got to be enough to sign it." That's why the ktuvah is in Aramaic. It would be translated into Hebrew. No chatan would sign it. They'd run away. No one would get married. But in Aramaic, no one knows what they're signing anyway. So Baruch Hashem, they write a ktuvah. Nah. So Avi knows. You give a girl a ring is kesef fine. Avi, you gave her a yishin niknet b'shloshet rachim the kesef o b'shtar o b'biyo. Or. Fine. Tell me, which is din Torah? Now let's talk like a lamdan. When you marry a girl with kesef, is that a din d'oraita? Or is that a din d'rabbanon, a tikkun chachamim, a divrei sofrim? I don't know what to call it. What do you tell me, Avi? Let's take, what is the pasuk in the Torah that's the source of kedushin? Devarim, it's in Chafbet, in Devarim, Kiyi, Kachi, Shisha, Ubala. So number one, you have already there, Ubala, beer is the only thing written explicitly in the Torah. It's the only thing written explicitly. We don't do beer today because of tznius, you understand? It's not sanua, chazal. Rav already, man giral man de makadish but beer. Already at the time of chazal, the Gemara in Kedushin, it wasn't tznius. If it wasn't tznius then, in the era of Madonna and Jackson in which we live, you can imagine already how not tznius stick it is. So that's out. We don't do it, period. In other words, because you would have to say to aid them, wait outside, I'm going to live with this woman for the sake of marriage. It's not tznius. We don't do it. So what's written explicitly we don't do. Where is kesef? How does one learn at kesef? Kicha, kicha, mistefer, gzeret shava. So what Avi did, he gave the girl a ring because shavi kesef ki kesef, and we learn now, ki yi kachi shisha, how did Avram Avinu gain Marat HaMachpelah? They ought to give a lesson to Rabin in Paris and company. How did they gain Marat HaMachpelah? Natati kesef hasada, kach mimeni. If there's one part of Israel that the Jews own, it is Hebron. Natati kesef asada, kach mimeni. It's a gzeret shava. Avi, when you marry a girl with a ring learned down from the Gezeirat Shava, is it the Oraita or the Rabbanan? What do you say? I should hope so. Is it the Oraita? It's the Gezeirat Shava. What do we call these? The hermeneutical principles. Yud Gimel Midot or Lamed Beit Midot. Shehat Torah Nidreshet Bahem. Right or wrong? Evan, am I right? Fine. Everyone's agreeing with the Rabbi. I'm happy to hear you agree with me. I'll tell you the truth. If I didn't know the Rambam, I would sit here thinking, what am I talking about? This is so elementary. Jason Apple saying, boy, the Rebbe is very, very elementary now. Then let's go a step further. Let's go back to the Pasuk. Ki yikach ishi sha'abala v'haya ki lotim sachin b'enav v'katav la sefer kritit v'natam b'yada v'yatsa v'hayta li'ishachea. How do you get rid of the woman? You write a reget. So the Gemara makes a hekesh. Just the yatsa v'hayta, makesh avayel yatsiya. Just as you get rid of the woman with the get, you take her in with the get. What does the word get mean? It means shta. You take her in with a shta. And this is a shta kedushin. The shta has to be written exactly like a get. Lishmo, lishmo, lishem kedushin. We don't do shta because it's much too difficult. You'd have to bring a sefer. It's like a get. Those of you that have seen a get, the reverse of that would be the way you do kedushin. And we haven't done it. The last shta kedushin I saw was in a museum, papyrus out of Egypt, the shta kedushin. I haven't seen it in hundreds of years, thousands of years. So fine. Now tell me, if for the sake of argument, Jacob Rosenthal finally finds the girl, and he decides he's going to do things differently. I mean, after all, he's the only guy in this room wearing a tie. So he's going to do things differently. He doesn't want his wedding to be boring. He is going to give a shtak, a condition. He can do it. He'll call it a cipher, pay the money, have it written, everything else. Jacob, the writer or the rabbanon, what you're doing? How do we learn that? A hekesh. The writer. It's just like Kesev. Yud Gimel Midot, right or wrong? Is there any difference between a Gezeirat HaShava, Michael, and a Hekesh? Yud Gimel Midot, Yud Gimel Midot, exactly. Fine, very good, wonderful. It's only one problem. Look at the Rambam. Hilchati Shet Perik Ala Halacha Bet. This is the most famous quandary in the Rambam. You have no idea. Look at the Rambam, so innocently. You know, it's a famous Rambam. Parak Aleph, Halach Aleph. If you look into it, I don't have time now. When I was a kid, I learned that Rambam. I was overwhelmed that he describes Kodin Matan Torah. You meet a woman on the street. You know, my Rebbe taught us the dignity of the human being. Who would dream that we're now living in a time where it's called the Matan Torah? You understand? Men meet women on the street. They go into a cave. Exactly, Kodin Matan Torah. Sex has no dignity. Human relations have no dignity. This is the generation in which we live, Lo Aleinu. And then the Rambam goes on, Perik Bet. However, God came along and taught us Kedushin. And he says, how do you do Kedushin? Listen to every word. Beautiful. It's the Mishnah. Right or wrong, Shlomo? He's recreating the Mishnah. And he's doing it like I did. Oh, oh, oh. He wants the Bavon. Don't be in Amaretz. Don't be in Nidich. You don't need all three. Or. Beautiful. And then the Rambam throws a bombshell that no hawk and no arrow missile has been able to knock out. Tobia ubishta meha Torah ubikesef me divrei sofrim. Unbelievable. Beer and star from the Torah and kesef me divrei sofrim. And the problem is so difficult because how? How does he differentiate between kesef to shtah? Shtah he calls divrei Torah, and kesef he calls divrei sofrim. Miman of shach. If kesef is mi divrei sofrim, shtah is mi divrei sofrim. How do you differentiate? And number one, and number two, how do you come along and say that deer is mi divrei Torah and kesef not? What does different suffering have to do here? So what? You learned it out, Yud Gimel Midot. Fine. You learned it out, Yud Gimel Midot. Fine. But Yud Gimel Midot, all of our Yiddishkeit, all of our Torah Shabbat, there is so much premised upon the Yud Gimel Midot and everything we learn out. Is it Din D'Oraita? Not a Din D'Rabbanan. It's called the Rambam in his Hakdamah to say this Rayim. Doesn't he spend so many paragraphs developing what are the Yud Gimel Midot? Right or wrong? What do we learn out? Remember, Din Mechudash, he coins, he gives it a whole new name, a whole new concept. Din Mechudash Mark. You know what I'm talking about? Hakdamah, the difference to the Seder's Rayim. He says there are three categories of Torah Shebal Peh that have a din d'oraita, halacha l'moshe m'sinai, perish m'kubal, and din m'chudash. And he gives so many examples and develops the terminology, and every child in the world knows that what you learn out through the hermeneutical principles has a din d'oraita. And here the Rambam comes along, it's a double question. Number one, how do you differentiate between Bia and Kesef? One is the Din Torah, and one is the Divrei Sofrim. And number two, you introduced the concept of Divrei Sofrim, how do you differentiate between Shtar and Kesef? And this is the Rambam in Mishneh Torah. You have no idea what's going on. You know what's more amazing? It's actually a Chivata Rambam where the Rambam is asked this question and justifies it. Goes into a whole elucidation that no one understands why Shtar and Kesef are different. That a Hekish is more the Pshat and the Pasuk. No one knows what he's talking about. Understand one word. But this is nothing. No? Can anyone tell me what I'm about to say? Have you ever encountered this problem? This is nothing. Kesef Mishnah already cites the Birchat Avram. He cites Seesaw, Chiv of the Rambam, son of the Rambam, Rabbafram ben Arambam. And they were like one. This is a father and son, that the whole Avram ben Arambam, the man lived under his father's shadow. His whole life was devoted to editing the Mishnah Torah and spreading the Mishnah Torah. He comes along in a Chiv and he says that I say Eidet Nemana that my father went and changed the text of the Mishnah Torah. And he said that you marry a woman b'kesef b'shtar v'bia, and these are his words, v'shloshtan davar Torah. And all three are min haTorah. And that makes sense. That would be beautiful. That would be logical. There's only one problem. This is the Mishnah Torah. That's the tshuva of the Ram of Ben HaRambam. The Rambam himself in the tshuva that survives says that the Mishnah Torah version is correct. You want to confuse the issue more? Look into the Kesef Mishnah, where the Kesef Mishnah quotes one of the Rishonim, the Ramach, that the Ramach says, Eidet, that he saw a tshuva of the Rambam, where the Rambam says, I changed it to read, V'kulam me divrei Torah, Shloshtam me divrei Torah, exactly what the son said Eidet on. It's mind-boggling. Who's right? What do you follow? And I want to tell you, with the Frumkeit binge, I wouldn't blame someone, you know, with the Frumkeit binge, if a guy said, I dafka want to be Mekadosh and Isha, Yedei Shta. Makes sense? What kind of business is this? A Kedushin Divrei Sofrim when you can have, and what does he mean by Divrei Sofrim? And how is that not the right thing? And again, the Shtar in there, it's no matter where you turn. And the Ben HaRambam, and the Chuvat HaRambam, and the Ramach Zedet, and the Kesef Mishnah goes crazy here. It's not the only one. Gentlemen, this issue remains unresolved until this very moment. Can anyone tell me something fascinating? Anybody? In Holland, the first half of the century, was a fine, I believe, Hungarian trained, afterwards a very scientific scholar. He was a Rav in Holland, Harav Yekutiel Yaakov Neubauer. He was killed by Hitler. His widow survived. She lived a block from where I live. She died in the early 70s, a woman in her 90s. He was killed. He was in his 70s, I believe, when he was killed. He was no youngster. His widow lived on, if I'm not mistaken, 33 Berlin. That building. I'm positive. That building. She survived the Holocaust. Her husband devoted his life to this problem. He researched it. And she published her manuscript in the State of Israel. It's one of the most fascinating volumes you want to see. Mossad Rav Kook. HaRambam al Divrei Sofrim. What does the Rambam mean by Divrei Sofrim? Particularly, Mark, this question. Jason, he reaches no conclusion. What's fascinating is he brings down about 30 different attempts to resolve the issue. It's very fascinating. Not one attempt from the Rishonim into the Achronim can never answer all the problems. Because no matter which way you go, had the Rambam said, Kesef and Shtame Divrei Sofrim, it would have been a minor problem. Then you have to explain why he's differentiating between Divrei Sofrim and between the Vat Torah, and you have to go through the entire Mishnah Torah and see where he uses the word Divrei Sofrim, what he means, and this is fascinating. And it may very well be that he uses Divrei Sofrim sometimes on a Torah level and sometimes on a rabbinic level. But the problem is that he differentiated not just between Bia and Kesef, but between Shtar and Kesef, and this problem, and then the contradiction between the Tshuva, and here's a Tshuva that he justifies his differentiation. And then there's a Tshuva in the name of the Rambam that people, where he changed the whole reading, and then someone says, and the Rabbi Avraham ben Rambam, and it's published in the Birkat Avraham, by Avraham Goldberg. I think it's your name, Goldman. You're Goldman. It's unbelievable. He was a scholar in France 150 years ago. He published the Birkat Avraham. It's amazing. Now, since we've mentioned the Tshuvat HaRambam, I'm going to give you one more source in this issue. And this is not the main. The main literature is, as I said, on the Rush and on Rabbi Yosef Karo. But what can I do? I was raised, I'm a Brisker, I love the Rambam, and it's... It's fascinating. And these are, and you can keep on looking for it. These are just little contradictions that I uncovered, but you can keep on looking, see if you come up with more. Barry, what's the history of Tshuvat HaRambam? Before you came to the Gris Kolel, you knew of the Mishnah Torah. Where did you see Tshuvat HaRambam referred to? Anybody. Where did you see Tshuvat HaRambam? You saw in the Kesef Mishnah, right or wrong. Saw it. Gentlemen, one of our greatest problems, Tshuvat of the Rishonim inevitably floated around. They were never collected properly. If I can give you a simple example, it's the Soloveitchik tragedy. All of you know that had the Rav systematized his writings and his tapes in his lifetime, what we would have. But lo zachino, he was a Brisker. His last name was Soloveitchik, with all the phobias, those of you that are psychologists, of the perfectionism, etc., it's well known. So, we're never going to have, it's going to float, this one's going to say this one's going to say that, and this one's going to quote this year and that year, and this safer and that safer. And as I said more than once already, 100 years from now, you go into the library, it'll be 100 different entries under the name Soloveitchik, Joseph Baer, 1903, 1993, and some will be good and some will be bad. The same thing with Tshuvat HaRambam. The first collection, can anyone tell me the name of the first collection? What do you know? Gentlemen, the name. What do you say, Uri? God bless that Uri, that man hits on all cylinders. And I've said that before. The Peir Hadar. When did the Peir Hadar come out? A very fascinating volume came out in Turkey. I believe it was the 17th century. What's amazing, it's the first rabbinic volume I ever saw with an advertisement in it. The publisher in back put an advertisement for his printing press. First time I ever saw it. And that Peir Hadar, they took together Tshuvot that existed, that were in Arabic translated, and I'll come back to this, if not this year, next year, they translated into Hebrew from the Arabic, didn't know what they were translating exactly, it's but that's the first collection. First collection. In the 20th century, two tremendous scholars devoted themselves to systematizing the Tshuvat HaRambam. One, of course, was the great Rav Avraham Chaim Freiman that I've quoted and time and again, my spiritual Rebbe to a certain degree in this course, Hashem Yikom Damo, killed by the Arabs that I don't forgive on the convoy out to Mount Scopus in 1948-1949. He issued Tshuvat HaRambam in 1935. However, his edition pales before the contemporary edition of the man that sits right in front of me and davening for the last 25 years at the 6:30 minyan in the morning in Ohr Rivka, Professor Yehoshua Blau, Chatan Pras Yisrael. All of you know this edition. It's in 3 volumes. Nothing equals it. And Professor Blau is the greatest expert in the world in Hebrew and Arabic. He's a Hungarian fellow who came here to avoid the Holocaust. And just amazing that this man goes on to become the greatest expert of... He may even be a Hungarian survivor, perhaps. The greatest expert. No, he came at the age of 16. I don't know. You have to work out. He came here at 16. He's older than I am by at least 10 years. So that would mean he came here before the Holocaust. And what a scholar. What an addition. Now, the Per Hador was reissued just a few years ago by Rav David Yosef. Rav Avadya's son. Rav Avadya has a large family. Not all the sons are Lamdanim Mufakim. This is one of the bigger Lamdanim among the sons, Rav David Yosef. Issued in 1984, published by Machon Yerushalayim. Now, you know what's interesting? I believe Rav David Yosef lives in Harnof, and he's the head of the Chavadat Kolel, if I'm not mistaken. That's his role on the Ovadia Yosef / Shas spectrum. Now, in his Hakdama, and this is the beauty of an edited edition, and I compared it, it's certainly infinitely better than the Per Hador that Uri, which Per Hador did you see, the original or the edited edition? So you can't compare. But the edited edition is infinitely better than the original edition, but it still comes nowhere near when you hold the Blau edition. The Blau has on one side the Hebrew, the other side the Arabic. I mean, what an edition. What scholarship. Now, in his Hakdama, he gets involved in this very problem. The very problem that tantalizes me, tantalizes him. When the Rambam contradicts himself, who do you follow? Here you have the Mishnah Torah, and here you have his Trivet of Achmei Lunel, and I'm quoting that from the introduction on page 14, and he gives many examples where the Rambam changes his mind, where there's mamish astira between the Trivet to the Chibur to the Mishnah Torah. So it's interesting. At first, he brings down all the Rishonim who hold that you have to follow the Chibur. He quotes the Rashba, you'll see. He quotes the Avudraham. He quotes the Rashbash. And all of them take the viewpoint that the Chibur is more important than the Chivat. Why? 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 Why do they take this viewpoint? Why is it? Why is it? And it's very simple. Because evidently they feel that the Chibur represents his final thinking. That Chivut were being written throughout his life. And that if he changed his mind after the Chibur, he would have revised the Chibur. And they bring proof from the fact that Rabbi Nu Avram ben Rambam and other Rishonim say time and again they saw an edited version of the Chibur. The Rambam made an annotation to it. The Rambam changed the original version. So this is one viewpoint that the Chibur is like his magnum opus. And if we have to assume that if he changed his mind, it would be reflected. He was constantly revising it. We know this. His son says Eidut. Rishonim say Eidut. The Kesef Mishnah says Eidut. You follow me, Avraham? And they say the Chibur comes before the Chivat. On the other hand, he brings down from the Radbaz and the Knesset HaGadola, which I quoted a few weeks ago, and the great Radbaz, the last Rishon. This is Rav David Ibn Zimra, the Rebbe of the Machaber. This is the last full Rishon, because sorry, the Machaber divides in half. He's schizophrenic. Tell the class what I mean. No? What do I mean when I say schizophrenic, the Machaber? That anything before the Shulchan Aruch has a din of a Rishon, and anything in the Shulchan Aruch has a din of an Achron. This is the way later generations, but the Radbaz was cool on Rishon. And the Radbaz and the Knesset HaGadola say clearly, no, for the exact reasoning of the Maharil, a tshuva halacha lemaisa is more important, because the tshuva is halacha lemaisa. It's not a chibur. It's more important. It is what we have to do. And they say, where the Rambam contradicts himself, we cannot be samech on the thought that had he changed his mind, he would revise the Chibur. Who knows what version of the Chibur we have? Who knows if we have the final caveat? And therefore, this machloket hangs fire, stands over. He doesn't go one way or another, but he brings down both viewpoints in his Pe'er Hadar. Gentlemen and young lady, what I'm about to tell you is a bomb that may yet explode in our lifetime. This is classified information. And I'm not playing games now. Watch. For whatever the reasons are, there's no question that the Rambam has tantalized Torah scholarship since the Gemara. There is no London in the world who will not tell you when you ask him for gut reaction, he goes, the Gemara, Rashi, and Taisvis, the Rambam. The Rambam. There's no question that the Mishnah Torah, in its simplicity, and its beauty, and its depth, and its organization, we are enthralled by it. And there's no question that the Rambam wrote hundreds and hundreds of tshuva that we have, and we search for. Those of you familiar with the Cairo Geniza know that the greatest finds in the Cairo Geniza were tshuvot of the Rambam, some of them autograph tshuvot. Do you know the difference between an autograph and a manuscript? Okay? Very important for you. And now on a high level of learning, understand it well. All Torah writing before Gutenberg was in manuscript. An autograph means a tshuva that the Rambam wrote b'ktav yado. Other tshuva are copied over. I don't have to tell you how valuable a tshuva is written b'ktav yado shel Rambam. An autograph copy is simply more valuable than a plain manuscript because there are no mistakes. It's the author himself. I don't have to tell you that the greatest find that Solomon Schechter had in the Cairo Geniza were the autographed tshuva of the Rambam. Some of them are still in Cambridge. Some of them are at JTS in New York, in a vault, air-controlled, etc. I held the Cambridge autograph tshuva of the Rambam in my hand. It's frightening, mind-boggling to hold in your hand something that the Rambam wrote. All of you know that anyone in scholarship is constantly on the lookout. Whenever you deal, and remember, the entire Cairo Geniza has not yet been deciphered. It was discovered over 100 years ago, and scholars still work in Cambridge with fragments. If you've ever seen what it's like, because it's Seamus, and there's thousands of little Seamus that we have not yet deciphered, may never decipher. All of you know this. By the way, one of my best friends, not my best friend, my closest friend going back so many years, is one of the great experts in the world, Professor Tzvi Groner in Kitva Yad, deciphering, etc. Gentlemen, with the opening of Russia, the St. Petersburg Library, a few years ago, was opened freely and totally to scholars over the world. In America, there is someone who sits in Cleveland who's one of the most fascinating people I've ever heard of. His name is Avram Shoshana, which tells you right away he's a Sfardi who studied in Tel's Yeshiva, and he is one of the most open-minded scientific people when it comes to Kitva Yad scholarship. Some of you have seen his articles, right, and Hadarom have seen his scholarship, his editing. He was able to get out of St. Petersburg an entire edition of one of the earliest Kitve Yad of the entire Mishnah Torah. I am told by people who have seen it that once it will be published, it will revolutionize our understanding of the Rambam. It would also create another problem.
And this is why, because he studied in Telz and because he comes from the right-wing Torah world, he's very frightening and holding back. I'm also told that when it's published, it will automatically void a good percentage of all the Chidushei Torah written on the Rambam. So for Enfinastir and Rambam to answer a contradiction, because when we'll see the original version of the Rambam in the Ketav Yad, we will see that our whole contradiction was only a result of faulty versions, copyist errors, emendations that crept in to the Rambam text. Now, this is going to be revolutionary. I'm told that it was brought to the attention of the Frankel Rambam, but it was too late for them to incorporate it into their work. So that there's something waiting for all of us in the future. The problem is, it's not the immediate future. I happen to know where a copy of the manuscript is available in Israel, and I can come any time I want, but I'm told in advance I'm not going to be able to understand the Ketav Yad. See, I have to come with someone who's an expert in the Ketav Yad of that period. But believe me, God, I know the time I'm going to end off now. The first thing I'm going to do, Jacob, when I see that Ketav Yad, Be'ezrat Hashem, is run like a madman to look at the Rambam in Hilchot Nashim. In Ishut, what is his shita? What did he hold? I mean, this is so fascinating. And how could he differentiate Perek Aleph Halacha Bet? Maybe there's a solution. And maybe we can bring good news to Rabbi Kutiel Neubauer's soul. What a question. Tantalizes us and haunts us. So, dear students, the people who give me life and strength and have made me too famous. You have no idea. No, I'm honest. I only speak honestly with myself. You have no idea how many calls today. This morning at 8:30, I had to tell someone I just can't take on another lecture. And I told him, you call me to teach Rav Moshe. I said, there are 1,000 people in Jerusalem. Call me if no one else can do it. I spoke a little fresh, but I just can't take the pressure. 5-6 calls a day, lectures here and lectures there. Rabban Soloveitchik worked me over, but good. Gentlemen, to reiterate, what have we done today? We're just laying the groundwork. The most fascinating is yet to come. We're still a long way to go, but what did we do today? We continue with the difference between the psak and the tshuva. And then we got involved with the contradiction. And we got the maril. But as I said, that problem ameliorates itself because ultimately we know that the Chatam Sofer is bigger than most in his generation. Ultimately we know Halacha Kabatrayi. And even though the Rivash was infinitely greater than Rav Moshe, we paskin like Rav Moshe. And we have to be Samach on Rav Moshe. We have to be Samach on Rav Moshe's insight. Look into his Hakdama in Orach Chaim. It's the only Hakdama Rav Moshe wrote to all his Sfarim. And he deals with the problem beautifully. How can I dare to be a posek if I don't come to the shoelaces of Rabbi Akivega or my Rebbe with the story I forgot? And thank you for helping me recall it. You know, which was a cute story. I remember the Rev broke into a big smile. If it would have been, if it's given my Zayda Tata, that means Ibigalein the Ganser Pasha. I've finished the Zayda, I've finished the Tata, means some of Sinef and Shulchan Aruch, you know, quote, end quote. And I got you involved before. I gave you a little foreshpice now, a little taste. I got you involved with the Rambam, with Tzitzit, with Yotzer Ara, with the tantalizing problem of Kedushin. There are many more, but that Kedushin one is the classic of classics. We have no answer. I told you what we haven't covered from St. Petersburg. It has to appear. It will appear. It only has to take time and guts and money and scholars. But boy, when that appears, I believe it's the earliest total, someone explained to me the uniqueness that it's the earliest total manuscript of the entire Rambam that we have from a very, very early date, and it's a signed volume where the Rambam